Okay, anyway, yeah, and I told him, I said, I'm going up to Minnesota, and I said, I'm going through Minneapolis. And I said, now if you see a white Dodge truck with a trailer run over a bunch of protesters, you're going to wonder if that's Brother Gibb. And I said, if he does that and then stops and backs over him again and then runs over him again, I said, you'll know it's Brother Gibb, okay? So it is good here. We made it to Minneapolis without being shot, burned, or mugged, so that was not too bad. This is, I'll just tell you this about the book table. You know, you guys have seen it before. I'll probably mention a couple of things only because we need the money. But this is the newest book. It is called Why We Believe the King James Bible. I was telling your pastor, I wrote this book by accident. The folks that do most of my printing have been in the printing ministry, King James Bible Believers, and they've had their ministry for 50 years. But 2 years ago, the president of the organization called me and said, our ministry is 50 years old. We're printing a 50-year commemorative Bible to celebrate that, and we would like something written to put in there on why we believe the King James Bible. So I started writing this, and I thought, whoa, you know, this would be good to put in print. So I added a few words, added a few pages. I think the whole thing is about 25 pages, 27 pages. So some of you take a few weeks to get through it. But now look, it's not, you know, it's not the understandable history of the Bible. It's not a thorough history of the Bible. And I was telling other guys, I said, this will actually probably hurt my answer book sales. A lot of guys buy the answer book and give them away. And that's a $7 book. This is only three. But if somebody says, why do you believe the King James Bible? Boom, there it is. So that is back there. I am going to say this. I don't know if I have one. But I don't. We have a new prayer card. If you would be so kind as to take a prayer card and pray for us, we would both be blessed. It'd be honored, but we'd be blessed. I was telling somebody, you know, I get these people all the time. They go, oh, I'll say, you pray for me? And they go, oh, yeah, but I wish I could do more. Oh, give me a large check. I'll pray for you. But but anyway, they do. They'll say, oh, I wish I could do more for you than pray. Guys, prayer's it. Prayer's it. I mean, I would take prayer to a check. Now, if you're not going to pray, give me a check. But but really, it is prayer that keeps me going. If everybody quit praying today, I would not be in the ministry 7 days from now. That is how it is. So I am addicted to prayer. I know some guys get addicted to painkillers and other things, but I am addicted to prayer, which means, oh, that sounds so spiritual. Not when you're addicted, because let me ask you a question. How can I make you pray for me? I mean, if I was addicted to painkillers, couldn't I find them on a street corner somewhere? I could buy them on a street corner somewhere. I could get somebody else's back pills or something. But nobody can. You can't make people pray for you. So if you would take a prayer card, I'd appreciate it. Anyway, the book table is out there. Mrs. Gipp is here. She will take care of the money for you. You know, I never see it. Anyway, so there's two ways to get what we have on the table. Either you can buy it, or since you are from the Minneapolis area, come back after the place is closed, throw a brick through the glass, take anything you want, and if you have to, set the building on fire, all right? Just like Minneapolis. I mean, is that not how it's done? Okay. So that is that, and we have been looking forward to being up here with your pastor. Your pastor has been a longtime friend. You know, I got to tell you this. I've been preaching for 50 years and evangelism for about 34, 35, something like that, which is really amazing when you think I've only got 7 messages. But, you know, there's of all the churches I preach in, there's kind of like 3 relationships that I have. And I really do. I come in and I'll come into a church and I'll have a meeting and that's that. I come in, I preach, I leave, and nothing. It's not bad, and a meeting could even be a good meeting, but there's not like a bond between me and the church, me and the pastor. And then there are churches where I come in, and the pastor and I Just become friends. And that is, I count your pastor, I've counted your pastor as a friend from the first time I was here back in, I think, 18-something. Whatever it was, we both had hair. But anyway, and I count your pastor as a good friend. So sometimes there's just no relationship with the pastor or the church, and then sometimes I just feel like I get a friendship with the pastor. And guys, I just tell you this, sometimes it is not just the pastor's my friend, but I feel like I have a friendship with the whole church. Okay. I don't know why I told you that. Anyway. Yeah, you guys are friends. I want you to open your Bible to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I'm not preaching out of that. I just want to see if it's in your version. But we lost everything as far as meetings. The last meeting I had was the first week of March, and that's when COVID folded up all around the country. We lost every meeting from there until September, except the one that was just before this. And your pastor and I had talked about a meeting, and so this just worked out. So we kind of pieced together three Sundays and two four-day meetings and a three-day meeting. We're coming east across the top, down through Ohio, and west across Mississippi, and it's just, I've been over there taking care of the college for 4 years, and they're well-meaning people, and these people say this: oh, we're so glad that you fly, because 9 months of the year now we have to fly. I have to fly to meetings because I'm teaching every Thursday, and so, and then during the summer we just hook up the trailer and head out, and well-meaning people say, oh, we're so glad you fly now. You don't have to drive everywhere you go. We love driving. We absolutely love driving. We do. So I tell them, I said, man, give me a truck stop about 1:30 in the morning, cup of coffee and a donut. Just get out of my way. Okay. And you know, especially the later it gets, the more you can drive by grace. We'll forget about that part. Anyway, yeah. All right. Now guys, I hate to say this, but I'm going to contend with you on something. Okay, now I don't know who I'm contending with. And that is this, Christians are quick to, to say amen to some statements. And by that I mean this. If I were to say, if I ask you how many of you saved and you open up your hand, I am not going to go, I don't believe that. I mean, if you tell me you're saved, I'm going to believe it. Most of you. Anyway, but... But really, and if I ask you this, how many of you love the Lord? Put up your hand. Man, I mean, everybody's going to put up their hand, right? I've never said, do you love the Lord? And somebody go, nah. I mean, guys, if you don't love the Lord, at least you're not stupid. So you're going to go, well, I don't love the Lord, but I got to put my hand up, because if I don't put up my hand up, they'll know. But there is a question that sometimes we preachers ask. And I think the hands go up too easily. And this is what I'm going to contend with you about, okay? And look, you don't owe me any kind of an explanation on anything. You understand? This message is really for you to do a little self-examination to see if you really can put your hand up on this, okay? Now don't do it, because I'm not asking you to. But this is the one. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 2. And it says this, beginning at verse 1, thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Let's bow our heads and I'll talk to you about my question. Father, thank you for your goodness and your grace. God, we are saved because of your goodness. We are saved because of your grace. It was your goodness that fulfilled the law. It was your mercy that let your son die on the cross for us. It was your grace that offered it to us. And I am thrilled. And God, I have preached in this church a lot. And these people are always thankful for the salvation that you have wrought. And so we are thankful tonight, God. And God, this is a Thursday night. It's not a church night, which means there's something everybody in this room is usually doing at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. And everybody, look at this room, God. Every single person here, by sitting where they are tonight, they are telling you they would rather be in church for you than home doing whatever they normally do. So I hope you're blessed by that. I hope they are blessed for that. I hope they're blessed because they came. I hope they're blessed by something that is said. And Lord God, I'll tell you what they need. They need to hear from you. You have got something you want to say to them. And they need to hear from you, Father. And I am the one that can prevent that by being in your way or being in their way. So Lord, please, for the sake of these people, would you please get Sam Gipp out of their way and out of your way? And you speak to them. God, I know all of the problems I have. I know all of the reasons you would choose not to speak through me, really. So I am the weak link in this chain. And so please, God, work in spite of the weak link and speak to the heart of each of your people, God, that maybe they would indeed be edified, and then being edified, they would go live to your glory. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. The third verse says this: thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Do not put your hand up. I'm not asking you to put your hand up. Don't put your hand up. But a lot of times a preacher will say, now, how many of you are soldiers for Christ? Oh, look, my hand's up. I'm a soldier for Christ. How do you know? Because my hand's up. And I think there's more to it than that, okay? You know, you could put your hand up when they say, do you love the Lord? You could put your hand up and not love the Lord, but having your hand up, who you can't tell. But this thing about saying you're a soldier. Now, I got to explain something. I got to give you 3 years of my life, 4 years of my life. 4 years of my life, don't worry, they won't be day by day, all right? But here's what happened. In 1966, I was lost, Roman Catholic, thief, drunkard, Democrat. You know, all those horrible, ungodly things, you know. And one night, me and four friends of mine, we stole two cars. We actually, I think about this, I never usually tell people, we're supposed to steal three. We stole these two brand new Comet Cyclone GTs, 1966, 394 speeds, 335 horse. But before that, what we were going to do is we're going to steal a used 1965 Chevy Impala 327 four-speed. That was going to be my car for the night because I like a Chevy. And when we got there, what I was going to do is we were going to steal that car, then I was going to drive them up to the dealership, the Mercury dealership, and steal the other two. And so when we got there, the Chevy had a dead battery. Ford men, don't say anything. And so we ended up walking to the Mercury dealer. So we stole these two Comets and literally flogged them to death. We left them both smoking alongside the road. And for the sake of the young people in here, the only dumb cops are on TV. Okay? Because, you know, I hear guys, they'll do, you ever notice how many guys do stupid things that are criminal on the internet, and then they put a video of them doing it? I didn't even get caught. Look, I there's no nice way to say this. You have to really be stupid to get caught committing a crime. Most people are not caught committing a crime. Most people... I can't see you guys. Yeah, I can see you. Most people get away with a crime. And then a couple days later, the black and white pulls up and takes them to jail. And that's what happened. We didn't get caught that night. But about a week or two later, black and white unit picks me up. I got arrested, charged with two cases of grand theft auto. I was sentenced to 6 months in the Mansfield Reformatory. Now you say, well, that doesn't sound very trying. The Mansfield Reformatory was not a really nice place. Anybody here ever been to Mansfield, Ohio? Okay, but some of you have seen the Mansfield Reformatory. There's some movie out there called The Shawshank Redemption, and at the beginning of this movie, they have this picture of this very ominous-looking prison. That's the Mansfield Reformatory. And so I got sentenced to 6 months in the Mansfield Reformatory, but because that was the first time, it wasn't the first time I stole a car, it was the first time I got caught. It got suspended, and I was put on 2 years probation. So that's when I was 16. And it didn't change anything. I was still living ungodly and still stealing and still being a drunk. And I remember my probation officer, he knew. I mean, he knew I was being as crooked as I could possibly. He knew there was absolutely nothing. And he told me one day, I was reporting to him, and he said, "Gip, I'm going to catch you jaywalking one of these days, and it is 6 months in Mansfield." So he was after me. So now, next year, 17. I was 17 years old, about 3 o'clock in the morning. I and my best friend, we were in my car, drunk. And we were driving on this old country road, and the country road made a 90-degree turn. And I made most of a 90-degree turn. And I put my car in a ditch. Now, I did not say I put it in a ditch. You know what you put in a ditch? You put a tire in a ditch. You might even put two tires in a ditch. Do you know what you put in a ditch? The whole car. I mean, you couldn't see from the road. The top was below the road level. How about 1957 Chevy Bel Air? And the only thing that was straight on it was the top and the trunk lid. Just totaled that car. So here I am, I'm 17. I still got a year on probation. I'm drunk. I'm out after curfew, and I am it's underage drinking. And so I thought, oh man, I'm going to Mansfield. So this trooper came by, and he said, "What happened?" I said a UFO came straight at me, and I turned to hit it when the deer was crossing the street by the dog that was going the other way. And I said I passed out. I told him, I said I passed out while I was driving. So I'll never forget this. I'm sitting in this cruiser next to this trooper, and he's being very calm, very nice guy. And he said, "How old are you, Sam?" I said, 17. He said, "Do you know it's illegal to drink in the state of Ohio under 18? "Oh, yes, sir." "Have you been drinking tonight?" "Oh, no, sir." So we're talking a little bit later, and not like 2 minutes later, he goes, "How old are you, Sam?" And I thought, how tragic to see it happen right beside you. Alzheimer's. I said, 17. "Do you know it's against the law to drink under 18 in the state of Ohio?" "Well, you know, I heard that somewhere." "Yeah, I do." And he said, "What happened?" He goes, "Have you been drinking tonight?" I said, "No, sir." And all of a sudden, he just blew up. And he looks at me and goes, "Well, one of us has, and it ain't been me." And I looked at him and I went, "Well, it must have been, because it ain't been me." And I don't know if it was the audacity or what, but he didn't arrest me, and I didn't go to jail. But I don't know if you know this. I really can't do this, okay? But if you did that right there to your forehead and have a brain wave done, what is that, an ECG? EKG? You're pretty. Anyway, one of those E starts with E, ends with G, and they stick pins in your head. If you do that any time in the next 60 days, it's going to come back scrambled. I mean, they're going to think they did Nancy Pelosi. And so the very next day after this wreck, my doctor, who incidentally is the same doctor that 5 years later overlooked my broken neck, so he was consistent, he did an E whatever G, and when he got the results back, he said, "You're a petite mal epileptic." Well, I'll tell you something, guys. I will be anything they want me to be as long as I don't go to Mansfield. So that was when I was 17. When I was 18, that was 1968. The Vietnam War was at its peak. I only did this for a couple of years. They were getting rid of the draft, and they were getting rid of the draft. They had for 2 or maybe 3 years, they had what they called the lottery. Some of you guys may remember that. And the way this worked was that they broke everybody that was draft age or military age into the first third of the year, second third of the year, fourth. I really got hit hard in the head that night. The fourth third of the year. And I was in the second one. Here's how it was. If you're in the first third, you're gone. If you're in the second year third, you're probably gone. Whichever this other third is, you get a day job, you're not going. And I was in the second. I was born in April, so I figured, okay, they're going to draft me, and I'm going to go in the Army, and I'm going to go to Vietnam. And they didn't. They just didn't draft me. So now, one more year, I'm 19. And when I was 19 years old, I can still remember, I was very upset about the Vietnam War, not against it. I was upset with how the press was treating our soldiers, how the soldiers were being treated. And I'll never forget, I walked into the Marine recruiter when I was 19 years old. I walked up to this recruiter and I said, I want to join the Marines, I want to go to Vietnam, I want to kill people. Now, you would think that would make a Marine recruiter happy. It did. It did. Man, he was grinning. And so I gave him a draft card. And you know, on a draft card back then, it was if you were 1A, you were fit for military service. If you were 4F, you were not fit. I was neither. I'd never looked at it. And so he starts filling out, and he goes, and he's looking at my draft card. He goes, oh. He goes, I can't recruit you. I said, why not? He said, you're 1Y. I said, what does that mean? He said, 1Y, you can only join the military if it's a declared war or a national emergency. And he said, Vietnam has never been a declared war, and it's not been declared a national emergency. He said, I can't let you in the Marines. And I really wanted to join, and I really wanted to kill people. And I should have just joined, Antifa, then I could kill people. But now, so guys, I was there at the Marine recruiter, and I tried to join the Marine Corps. And when I see a guy that's been in the Marines, do you know what the fact that I tried to join the Marines means? Nothing. Nothing. Because I wasn't one. I imagine it happens to you. You meet some guy and go, oh, I was going to go to PBI. And they say that like they just absorbed 3 years of education. Right? You ever have it happen? I was going to go to PBI. I look at them like, yeah, but you went to kindergarten instead. Well, really, you went to some Christian babysitting service for 3 years that your folks paid for, and you never learned any Bible. Don't walk around and say, well, I almost went to PBI, because you know what a PBI graduate thinks? So what? You didn't go. And I didn't join the Marines. And here's my first question. I'm going to ask you some questions tonight. You answer them to yourself because you don't owe me an answer. But you do owe God one. If you are dare going to raise your hand when somebody says, are you a soldier? And you're going to raise your hand. You better be able to answer these questions. The first one is, when did you join? When did you join God's army? I'm going to ask this question. You can raise your hand. If you're qualified, you can raise your hand. How many of you either were or presently are, it can be the reserves or the guard, but how many of you either were or are in the U.S. military? Let me see your hands. How many of you were, you're veterans or you're active now? Okay. Like Bob, you were a Marine, correct? Yes, sir. I almost said Navy, but there's no back door here. But you know how Bob got in the Marines? He told me one time. He said he always liked the Marines. He wasn't against the Marines. And one night he went to sleep and he woke up in his Marine uniform and he thought, I must be in the Marines. Now, does anybody in here believe that? No. No. You talk to anybody that you saw raise your hand just now, and every one of them will tell you, I remember the day I got in. They all know, whether they were drafted, whether they enlisted, whatever happened. But I'm telling you, anybody that ever got in the military, they remember when they got in. They remember how they got in. And I hear people saying, I'm in the Lord's service, and they don't even know how they got in. You don't get in through osmosis. Do you understand? You talk about trying to join the Marine Corps. I was a youth director. And somebody gave me the neatest letter opener I ever saw in my life. It was a miniature M1 bayonet. It was the coolest letter opener. And you say, but I don't have it anymore. You say, well, I gave it away. I loved it, but I gave it away. You know why? Because before they gave it to me, when they gave it to me, but before they had, they said this. They said, you put me in mind of a Marine. Isn't that great? Somebody who's never been in the Marines thinks somebody else who's never been in the Marines should be a Marine. How many? Anybody ever come up to you and say, I want to join the Marines? They did that day? And you think, so what? And they said, you put me in mind of a Marine. So they had engraved on the blade of this little M1 letter opener, bayonet letter opener, they put U.S. United States Marine Corps. And every time I'd look at that bayonet, I thought, I got no business having this, because I was not a Marine. I had a pastor friend, and he was a Marine. He had been a Marine, and I think he's 1,000 now. He's still a Marine. But you know what I did? I took the letter opener to him, and I said, I told him how I got it, and I said, look, they put United States Marine Corps on it. I have no business having this. I said, you're a Marine. I want you to have it. I have had a friend. He is with the Lord now. He was saved. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Special Forces in Vietnam. He's the guy that asked if he could. He wanted to write the introductions to the Fight On books. And he liked me, which must have taken a lot of blows to the head. But and you know what he did? He gave me a baseball hat, and it's all black. You ever see a military officer and the bill of their cover has all that gold braid on it? Well, this black baseball hat has this kind of a scrambled eggs gold on it, and across the front it says, Combat Infantryman. That hat never, ever went on this head. You know why? Because I wasn't even in the Army. You think I'm going to put on a hat that would infer that I was a combat infantryman? And I would go to churches, and I don't know if you know this, but in our military, 1 out of 10 is actually in combat. And so I had to find guys. Look, I think it's great to have been in the military, but I had to find a guy who was a combat infantryman so I could give him that hat. You say, why? I had no business doing it. I wasn't in the Army. And guys, look, if you say, well, I'm in the Lord's Army, when'd you join? You ought to know when you join. Don't sit there and say, well, I've always been for the Lord, and I've never been against the Lord, and I want good things to happen for the Lord, so I must be in the Lord's Army. That's not how you get in the military. So, if you're in, when did you get in? You should know. Hey, you know what, guys? You know how I know this is true? Because I remember when I tried to get in the Marine Corps and did not. But I remember when I got in the Lord's Army. I was down in Pensacola. I'd been just saved about 6 months. I can't remember who was preaching the revival, but it was in January, and I want to say it was January 21st, 1971, and I came forward, and I got down on my knees at the altar, just like I had when I got saved, and you know what I did? I got down on my knees not in the Lord's Army, and I got off my knees in the Lord's Army, and I've been in that army for almost 50 years. I remember when I got in. And so, guys, if you say, well, I'm a Lord's soldier, okay, when did you get in? My second question, if you were in the Lord's army, who's your enemy? You know what I find remarkable? Most of God's soldiers are killing God's soldiers. Most people who have had any kind of spiritual combat have had it torpedoing one of their own. There's a phrase we say, and I don't say it because I don't believe it. It's kind of cool when you say it. We go, we're the only army that shoots its own wounded. I don't believe that. We're the only army that makes its own wounded. We take people that are perfectly fine, and we hurt them. You know, when that first Gulf War began back in 1990, it was an army base in this country, and there were a group of soldiers in a room. And a sergeant in the army walked up to the door of the room they were in, pulled a pin on a grenade, and threw it in, killed 2, and wounded 11. He was a Muslim. I was surprised. I thought, that sounds like something a Baptist would do. But really, guys, that's how Baptists are. We count all of our victories by how much damage we did to some Christian, to some preacher, to some church. Always shocks me when you talk to people of the church, oh, this is the Lord's church. I love this church. This is the Lord's church. And then when they get mad, suddenly they feel it compelled that they have to hurt the Lord's church as much as they can. What, it quits being the Lord's church when you leave? And guys, all I'm asking you is, who is your enemy? Now, don't sit there right now and go, oh, I don't want to have any enemies. Kill yourself. That's the only way you're going to do it, bucko. You have enemies. They burnt your city down. Did they not? You say, well, they don't dislike me. Oh, yeah? Walk down and talk to them. See what happens. Well, I don't want anybody. You, look, can I tell you 30-something guys something? Now, look, I know I'm going to smack you in the mouth, but you need it. I'm serious. I don't mean this in a bad way. Somebody asked me, what's the difference between Christianity in the 1970s and today? And I said, in the 1970s, in our churches, we had these young girls, 18, 19, 20 years old, who love the Lord and want to serve God, just want to marry some young man that wanted to be a preacher, a soldier, a warrior for Christ. And then there was this 18, 19, 20-year-old guy who wanted to be a soldier for Christ and wanted a wife like that, and they got married and lived happily ever after and served the Lord all their lives. My wife and I are two of those. She wanted to serve God. She wanted to marry a preacher. I wanted to serve God. I wanted to marry a wife that was not going to be a spectator, and that's it. Let me tell you something. I go around the world, and I preach in churches that are not just all King James. They're King James Bible believing, but they're not all like us. Some of them they tend to be a little bit looser, a little not contemporary, but a little more fundamental than Bible believing. You know what they tell me? They tell me the same thing. We still have the 18, 19-year-old girls who want to serve God and want to marry a soldier for Christ, and we can't find the guys. You know why? Because the guys don't, I can't find, you won't hear a 20-year-old young man say, I want to be a soldier for Christ. They won't say, I want to be a warrior. They don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to offend the devil. And it's not that they're afraid of the devil. They just don't want on their resume they ever offended anybody. They don't want to be God's warrior. They don't want to be God's soldier. They want to be God's IT man. They want to be his PR man. They want to be his networker. That's what they want. They want to be his great negotiator. And I'm serious. You got girls all across this country, and there's an absolute void of young men. You know what these guys are going to do? They don't even get behind a pulpit and pastor a church. Well, why would I want to pastor 20 or 30 people when I'm going to make a video for God and put it on the internet, and I'm going to reach 8 billion people, and the whole world is going to be converted by my video? I had a young man. I held this kid in my arms when he was a baby, and it being one of my students. And he was first year, and he says, let me tell you what I'd like to do. And he's very techie, you know, IT techie. And he said, I want to make videos for the Lord. And I said, sit down. I said, I'm going to crush you. Well, I did. I said, do you have any idea? And I'm serious. I said, do you have any idea how many times I've heard that same stupid statement out of guys your age? You think you're the first guy to have that idea? And I find these guys, you know, that Steven Anderson guy, you know, that teaches mid-tribulation rapture? There are people in our camp who think he's wrong and don't like me getting on him because they're his age and I'm older, and they jump on the old guy jumping on somebody their age, even if they don't agree with him doctrinally, but they won't jump on him because they don't want to offend anybody. Or they might be cowards, I don't know. But what I'm saying, guys, look, there's somebody, you just ought to ruin ruin their day. I contend, and I think I'm right, if a Christian had a gun and had one bullet in it, and they went downtown, there is the devil. Could you imagine the grief that you could remove from the world if you just took him out? I don't know who'd run the Democratic Party after that. But anyway, and there is the devil, and you got one bullet, and there he is. And there's that preacher I'm mad at. And I will guarantee you, the devil would get a pass every single time. We would put the bullet in the preacher. We'd put the bullet in our brother or sister. You know what kills me? They don't want to argue with the devil's crowd, but they'll get in our faces. They'll jump on your pastor. He's too legalistic. He's too gruff. He's too mean-spirited. I'm telling you, some of these guys, if they don't wear skirts, they ought to. All I'm asking, who's your enemy? There ought to be somebody. Look, I'm sorry if you don't feel this way. And, you know, I remember one time, I'd just been arrested, and my dad just bailed me out. And I remember, my dad was a good man. He's a very good man. And worked hard. And I can remember he said this. He was angry. And he said, I'm trying to make the name Gip good in this town, and all you're doing is tearing it down. That statement is why Gipps Understandable History Bible is on that table. Because when it first came out, it was an Understandable History of the Bible. And when I did the second edition, I changed it to Gipps. Oh, because your name? So no, that was from my dad. Honest, that was from my dad. I wrote it in there. That's from my dad. I did a lot of damage to the name Gipps. Okay. And he said that. He said, you know, I'm trying to make it good and you're making it bad. But guys, I'm going to tell you this. I want my name to be good. I want it to be associated with the Lord and defending the Bible and being a friend of churches. But there are some people that when they say Gip, I hope they say it like this. Well, at least I'm not like Gip. You say, yeah? You really? Yeah. So who would that be? Guys that come into churches and steal members and tell them they're going halfway through tribulation. Guys that try to destroy people's faith in that book. Yeah, there are some people that I want to ruin their day. You understand? Right. And there's sometimes, that's all I try to do. In the love of Jesus. But guys, look, you got to know. My dad, you know, I talk about getting in the military. My dad was drafted into World War II when he was 33 years old. He was too old for combat. And what he ended up being in was in the navies, they call them the Seabees. He was in the Air Force, and I think today they call them the Red Horse. And those are the guys that go in and build the bases. And what was really funny is when our oldest son, John, was in the Marine Corps, and he was stationed in Naha, in Okinawa, I said, son, your grandfather built that base. A few years ago, I preached in Wewak, New Guinea, and a lot of times a World War II airfield became the airport. And so I asked the missionary I was with, I said, is that airport that I flew into, is that the old World War II airfield? He said, no. He said, well, you go right past it on the way to the mission station, I'll show it to you. And so we're climbing, and in New Guinea's all mountains, you know, and we're climbing up here, and then we come to this one place, and there's this dead level place with grass about that high, and it's just, it looks unnatural. He said, right there, he said, that's the old World War II airfield. I said, my dad built that. Do you know my dad's papers said when he got drafted? How long he was going to be in the military? For 1 year. Or the duration of the war. Do you know that they thought that war was going to 1950? The atomic bomb took 5 years off that war and saved millions of American and Japanese and other people's lives. But my dad went in 1941 and got out after the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. My dad was drafted and he served in the 5th Air Force. The 8th Air Force was in Europe and the 5th Air Force was in Asia. And my dad knew who the enemy was. Now, I'm just going to tell you something. There ought to be somebody you don't like. You get this thing about, I get so tired of it. Well, I cry for souls. And I want those people that hate God to get saved. I couldn't care less if they do. I'm all for them getting saved. I said, I don't care. You better remember something, guys. You know what's wrong? You get into a war and you have to shoot an enemy soldier. You know what you don't do after you shoot him? Run up there, look in his wallet and go, look, he had 3 children and he had a wife and I killed him. You drop him like a bad habit. You say, why? Got in the wrong army. Now, I'm going to tell you, there's some people, I don't care if their hair is purple and they got rings in their nose, they are not the devil's soldiers. Some of them just need liberated from their sin. But there's some of them in the devil's army. Well, how do you know the difference? It's easy. They shoot at you. You ever street preach? And some guy comes by and you look at him and you think, oh man, this guy looks like he just came out of a haunted house. And you're thinking, I'm going to try to give him a track. I hope I don't catch something. I hope he didn't kill me. And you hand it to him. He goes, oh, man, thanks. But then somebody drives by and waves something at you or blows the horn or yells something. That's the devil's soldier. Don't try to win them. Do this on your own. Read the book of John. The book of John, the gospel. It is a military march by Jesus Christ. And let me tell you what to look for. Every time there was a battle, you're going to find this verse, okay? You look at John, Jesus Christ never, ever tried to win an adversary when they confronted him. If the Pharisees came up to him, he burned them. Well, what about Nicodemus? He wasn't nice to him. You call yourself a teacher in Israel and you don't know this? And every time he engaged an enemy, he never tried to win him. But you know what happens right after that? There's a little verse, no more than two lines, and it'll say, and many believed on him. So how does that work? You remember the Gulf War? Here is Kuwait, and here is Iraq. So now here's Kuwait, here's Iraq, and now you got two kinds of people in Iraq, right? Or in Kuwait, right? You got Kuwaitis that need liberated and Iraqis who need ventilated. And then a third group showed up called the U.S. Army. And they would engage the Iraqi army and kill them. And everybody where they had been, where the Iraqi soldiers died, was liberated. That's what the Lord did. Every time a Pharisee came up and got in his face, he got back in their face. He didn't try to win those Pharisees. And then somebody watching went, man, they got down on their knees and believed. And I'm telling you, don't sit there and act like you don't cry for every soul. I hear people say, I cry for all lost people. God might care for all lost people, but you're not God. And there are some folks need to go down, guys. So, who's your enemy? Let me ask you this, if you're in the military, if you're in the Lord's army, who are you supporting? I told you, out of every 10 in our military, out of every 10 people in any branch of the military, only one is in combat. The other nine support the one. Now, don't sit there right now. Yeah, see, that's the whole problem. We've just got too much fat. You wouldn't think that if you were that one. I want to tell you something I don't believe. It's just something that's kind of in our group. It's all, you know, almost in all Christianity. I don't believe that everybody has to go door knocking. I don't believe that everybody has to go street preaching. Now, I think everybody ought to be passing tracts. If you're afraid to pass them, find some place to put them where people will find them. But do something, okay? But here's what I'm saying. You say, well, I'm just afraid. I just can't knock on a door. Okay, fine. Then fill up the gas tank of somebody that does. You say, why? Support them. Well, I don't want to do that. Then go knock on doors. How big is their tank? Really, guys? You ought to support them. Hey, you got missionaries out there to countries you don't ever even want to show up in. Support them. There's countries I don't ever want to go to. You know what I do? Support missionaries there. You say, why? Because I don't want to go there. And I don't want them to go to hell. So I support them. Guys, who are you supporting? There ought to be somebody you're supporting. This happens a lot. A lot of these guys now, white-haired. I was at a church. I really can't tell you where it was. I can't remember because that's happening a lot. Who are you people? Anyway, I'm at this church. And after the morning service, we all went to a restaurant, the pastor and a bunch of church members, and sitting right around the corner from me is this white-haired guy with a baseball hat, says Vietnam veteran. There's a lot of guys. A lot of guys came home from Vietnam. They didn't want to hear about the military. Boy, once they turn about 60 or 70, all of a sudden it's like, you know what I did? And I said, you were in Vietnam. And I mean, you could just see the pride, you know? He said, yeah. I said, what branch service? Air Force. I said, really? Yeah. I said, what'd you do? And he went, I was a clerk. I said, I don't care what you were. You did more militarily for this country than I've ever done. You know you need a clerk. Do soldiers get paid? Guess who they need? Could you imagine a soldier saying, I didn't get a check? Well, that's because we made all the clerks become guys in the line, and so they're all fighting now. Well, you know, that guy's just a cook. Just a cook? How would you like to be engaging the enemy army in mortal combat, and you get hungry and say, I'm hungry, and they go, well, we don't have any cooks because we just make everybody a frontline soldier now. Well, I got wounded. Oh, man, I'm sorry. We don't have any corpsmen and we don't have any medics because everybody's a frontline soldier now. Everybody's in a foxhole. Well, you know, my tank broke down. Well, fix it because we don't have anybody that works on them. Hey, guys, you know, you ever hear this? Everybody says this like they made it up themselves. Talking about people at paratroopers. It's a crazy person. who would jump out of a perfectly good airplane. To which I say, no. No, I really don't think so. It's a crazy person who would jump out of a perfectly good airplane wearing a parachute that they didn't pack. You know, I really believe anybody that has been a parachutist should get saved rather easily. They know about faith. Amen. That's a lot of faith to jump out of a plane that somebody else packed your chute. Now, there's a tag in there, and if you become a little wet spot on the ground, they'll look him up. Ain't going to do you any good. Yeah, I bet that truck ain't there either. Guys, our paratroopers don't pack their own chutes. Aren't you glad somebody knows how to do it if you're a paratrooper? And what I'm saying, guys, is if you don't want to do something, help somebody. Help somebody do it. If maybe there's a country back there and it's your ethnic background, I'm not big on that, you know. My ethnic background is Romanian. My folks were Romanian. Grandparents were Romanian. And we support a missionary to Romania. We do. We support some missionaries into other countries. But maybe that would be it. Maybe you say, you know what? I can't see the countries there, but you say, well, you know, my family line came from that country there. You know what I think I'm going to do? Our church supports that missionary, but I think I'll support them every month. Well, maybe they got enough support. I've never seen a missionary had enough support. I'm serious. I was in Australia it's been a few years now. It used to be one U.S. dollar would buy two Aussie dollars. That meant an Aussie dollar was worth 50 cents. But in 2012 when I was there, it took $1.03 American to buy one Aussie dollar. 2 weeks later, it took $1.15 to buy one Aussie dollar, which means the Aussie dollar was strong. You know what that meant? That meant the guy that was getting $1,000 a month support had instead of having $1,000, we might have had $2,000 buying power at one time, now had $500 worth of buying power. So what do you do about that? Send him a check. You know, you get a missionary in here. I said a missionary. I'm not trying to get you to do this for me, okay? Whenever evangelists talk about people, about giving, they always think that they're trying to get you guys to give it to me, and you don't have to. I don't ask about the offering. I don't know how many times I've preached here. I've never said, I got to have this much money, right? That's right. You didn't get that letter?
No.
Bow your heads. We're out of here. And honest, guys, honest, I take whatever you give me, and if it's a good offering, good, and if it's a lousy offering, I just go down the road. Bad mouth you. But, boy, you know what? You have a missionary in here, go fill his car up. Buy a $50 grocery card for him or restaurant card for him, take his wife out or some store. I want to say Walmart, but they're kind of joining the BLM. I'm not crazy about them. Really, they are. They gave $100 million to the building burners and the killers. $100 million to the communists who want to destroy your country. So what are you going to do? We're going to get everything we can that we don't. I'm not going to say we're never going to shop at Walmart again. We're going to get what we have to get there. But we're going to pay more for it somewhere else. It's going to cost us more. You say, why? Because I like my country. But what I'm saying, guys, is support somebody. Support somebody. Keep them in the fight. Man, let me tell you what happened. I had and I'm gonna tell you to do something, and you're going to do it. You know, that's what, preachers, aren't we always trying to get you guys to do something, and you're always fighting it? I'm going to tell you to do something, you're going to jump right on board. But let me tell you what happened. I was pastoring, and I love to take my wife out. I just love to take her out to eat. I just love to watch her eat. Hear her eat. And I've been saving up like $5 here, $10 here, $5 here. I had in my wallet $100. I am going to take my wife out. She didn't even know I got it. And I was sitting in the office of the church that I was pastoring. My phone rang. And it was a preacher I knew, and he said, I'm going to ask you to pray for a preacher in Ohio. I said, okay. I said, what's the story? He said, well, it's a Baptist church, and he made him mad, And you could tell it was a Baptist church because he made them mad, and now they quit tithing and tried to starve him out. Is this not Baptist doctrine? And he said, yeah, he says, people are starving him out, and would you pray for him? And I said, I sure will. So as soon as I got off the phone, I got down on my knees. I started praying for this guy. And I said this. I said, God, give that guy some money. He needs money. And God said this. You give him some money. I mean, you know, why does he always have to answer those kind of prayers? But I told him, you know, honest, I said this. I said, I don't have any money. I said, I'm a Baptist preacher. You know that. And you know what he said? Got $100. And honest, I'd forgotten about it. I said, yes, I do. I said, I'll send it to him. Now, I don't know who invented this, but I hope this guy died a millionaire. I don't know who invented the designated offering. You know what a designated offering is? That's where I give the money and tell the guy how to spend it. I think we ought to have designated taxes. I pay my taxes. But I wish they'd say, now, where would you like your taxes to go? I would write BB, bombs, bullets. Well, that would beat paying for the middle of a city in Minnesota that got burned down by a bunch of commies. Yeah. And I don't want to pay for some schlock living under a bridge somewhere, or some illegal's health care. I want to buy bombs and bullets. And so I sent this guy this $100. I've never met this guy. I wouldn't know him if he walked in here tonight. I never talked to him. I've never seen him. And I wrote him, I told him this. I sent him this $100. Now, I know he's going to tithe. It's going to give him 90. And I said, brother, this is a designated offering. Now, can I tell you guys something? Because maybe just a little bit, you'll never say it out loud, but maybe just a little bit, maybe you think, you know, these preachers are always after money. I'm going to tell you about Baptist preachers because I know them. If a Baptist pastor needs money bad, and somebody gives him some money, and he knows a church member that needs money bad, he will flow it right to them. I've seen it over and over and over. And I don't want this guy doing that. I don't want to give this guy $100 and have him give it to somebody else. And so I said, this is a designated offering, which means he's going to spend it the way I tell him. I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this money and take your wife out to eat. Go to a nice restaurant and take her out. And you say, well, why would you do that? I want to take her his wife. Oh, you knew his wife. I didn't know his wife. I don't even know her name. No. I don't know his wife. I don't know him. Here's what I know. This guy, he's going to get through this. You say, how do you know? He's a man. Now, he may go out behind the barn and say some things to God that he shouldn't say. And a couple days later, he's going to go back behind that barn and apologize to God. But he's going to get through it. But I don't know if his wife's going to get through it, because let me tell you something, guys. The pastor's wife, it's always harder on them. So I figure, let's get her. Let's take her out. Let's take care of her. Because I told him, I said, now I don't believe, they're going to spend $90 on two people eating. So I said, with what's left, go to the mall and buy your wife a dress. Say, why? Because I want that. I want to get her. I want to meet this guy in heaven and say, have him say, that helped me. Well, he did write me a letter. I got it about a week or two later. And he thanked me. He was very appreciative. And he says this. And this is the thing. He thanked me for the money. But he said this. He said, the most remarkable thing about your money was that your letter arrived on April 18th. Well, I don't know about April 18th. 3 days late for taxes. I don't know what April 18th means, And so I'm thinking, well, what's the big deal about April 18th? He said, April 18th is our wedding anniversary. And he said, because of the financial problems in the church, I didn't have any money to take my wife out to eat for anniversary or buy her a dress. Now I'm going to tell you guys to do something, and you are all going to do it. You are going to happily do it. Here it is. This is Thursday. Between now and next Thursday, I won't even be here when you do this. You don't have to tell me you did it. Between now and next Thursday, go to your favorite store. Men, Cabela's, Bass Pro Shop, Craftsman section of Sears. Ladies, Hobby Lobby. Joanne, Cedric. Anyway, I want you to do this. In the next 7 days, go to your favorite store and spend $100 on yourself. Aren't you glad you came tonight? Oh, man, you can blow $100 on yourself and say, that's what the preacher told me to do. I'm telling you, go spend $100 on yourself in the next 7 days. Just remember this. You will never get the joy from spending $100 on yourself than giving it to somebody that keeps them in the fight. I had a pastor friend. I was Roman Catholic when I got saved. This pastor was Roman Catholic when he got saved. I witnessed to my parents. He witnessed his parents. I loved my dad. He loved his dad. 12 years after I got saved, my dad got saved. 12 years after he got saved, his dad died and went to hell. I called him up. I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm backslid as hell. You say, I don't think a preacher ought to talk that way. Neither did I. So I hung up on him, called all our friends, told us to break fellowship with him. Well, isn't that what we do? No. But you know what? I looked at my wallet. I had $40. I didn't have 41. I only had 40 bucks. I did the same thing. There was going to be no dress this time around, not on 40 bucks, but I sent him 40 bucks. I said, I want you and your wife to take this money and go out. And he wrote me a letter, and I've been with him since, and he said, you will never know, but that $40 kept me in the ministry. Why are you proud when you get two preachers separated in fellowship? Why would you think you accomplished something when you destroyed somebody's reputation or got somebody out of the ministry or hurt a church? Why would you be proud of God's people and God's soldiers that you kill? Why would you be proud about that? Man, you catch somebody that's about to fold up and give up, wouldn't it be nice? Now, look, you're going to heaven, are you not? Wouldn't it be nice when you got to heaven if you find out you sent one of those missionaries a check or you did something for some preacher and they said, I already decided to quit. I'd already given up. And then you called me and you sent that check and you let me know you were praying for me. And that kept me going. So I'm asking you, if you're in the military, Lord's military, who are you supporting? Let me ask you this. I've only got 25, 26, 27, 28. Can we break for lunch? Let me ask you this. What is your military objective? Every military has an objective. You know, I really feel bad. I think since Korea, our military has not had much of an objective. Could you explain to me how we, this country, could fight two world-class military outfits, Germany and Japan, at the same time and have it be over in 4 years? And we fight a bunch of guys that ride camels for 25. You say, how? I think somebody's not trying to win. They didn't try to win in Korea. They didn't try to win in Vietnam. They're not trying to win in Afghanistan. They're not trying to win in Iraq. You know, I told you my dad served in the 5th Air Force in the Pacific. You know what his job was? Win. That's it. I mean, you got to have some kind of objective, don't you? Are you going to die if the Lord tarries? Okay, and if he doesn't, then your life ends at the rapture, right? Okay, so either way, everything you're doing for Christ is going to end when you leave this earth, be it rapture or death, right? Okay, what's the sum total of your life? A trophy? Well, most improved golf trophy? Really? I was visiting with a pastor one time. We visited one of his church members. The girl was not there. She was not there when we visited. We were sitting in the family's living room. It was about as wide as this. And one end of the living room, wall to wall, out about three depths, trophies. Taller than me. She's a beauty queen. I didn't even see a picture of her. But there it is. I wonder how many of those are going to get to heaven. You know, Evander Holyfield, saved man, boxer, did something nobody else did, won the heavyweight championship belt 4 times. Nobody ever did that. Clay only won it 3. He won it 4. You're going to see him in heaven someday. Yeah, yeah. Ask him. Show me one of them belts. Oh, man, they wouldn't let me bring them. It would sound like a wasted life to me. Look, when this thing is over, guys, what do you want to be? What do you want the sum total of everything you have tried to do? What do you want it to be? What is your military objective? You know, I'm going to tell you something. I got 2, and that's a lot. I have 2 military objectives, and that is a lot. You know what it is? I want to get, now get this, don't mishear me. I want to get every person on this planet worshiping the right God. You want to get them all saved? I don't think I can get them all saved. But even if they're not, I want them worshiping the right God. You say, where'd you get that from? I got that from 2 Kings chapter 17. Read it yourself. Let me ask you a question. Can the Ten Commandments, if somebody's lost, if they live the Ten Commandments, will it get them to heaven? Come on. It's not a trick question. No. But I'll bet you wish your lost neighbor was. Let me ask you this. If everybody in Minneapolis in the last 6 months had been trying to keep the Ten Commandments, would it be burned to the ground right now? Why? Lost people? Because even if lost people try to live by it, hey guys, if everybody in this area lived by the Ten Commandments, you wouldn't lock your doors. Your kids would be safe to play out in the street, out in their yard. Isn't that true? I want everybody on this planet worshiping God. You say, why? Because he made everybody on this planet to be a pleasure to him. He wants them to be a pleasure to him. And I want that. I want him to get the pleasure. Now, I hope they get saved. But even if they don't, I hope he gets pleasure. So I'm trying to get every person on this planet to worship the right God. And I want everybody using the right book, King James Bible. And that's it. I don't have a bunch. But when this is all over, I hope. I was talking to a guy yesterday. And he said, I got a guy at work, he's saved, and he went online and he looked at your big deal videos, the little 12-minute videos that we did, production videos in the King James Bible, and he said he got converted to the King James Bible watching those. And I'm not going, well, you know what I feel like? Look, guys, do you ever go shooting? Isn't it nice to hit the bullseye? And every now and then, it's just nice to know I hit what I was shooting at. Really, it's just nice to hit what you're shooting at. And so, guys, when it's all over, what do you want? Let me ask you this. What is your, if you're in the military, what's your theater of operation? For my dad, it was the Pacific. For some people, I had an uncle. He was in Patton's Third Army. For him, it was the European theater. For my dad, it was his brother, it was the Pacific theater. You know what my theater is? You know what your theater is? Here, right here. I can't stick around. There's some things need done in your town. I'll try to help, but my goodness, guys, I can't stick around and do this. And you don't want me to. You could do it. But I got news for you. You know, I can't get over how many Bible-believing Christians are happy about what's happening to our country. They have made hating the United States almost a Bible doctrine. And when I hear that, you know what I think? This is our watch. This is our watch, is it not? Do you think you're really going to be proud to say, I saw to it that the patient died on my watch? I know more Bible-believing Christians have tried to bury America alive just when they thought it was dead, and America kicks the dirt out and comes back up. Come on, I thought Obama was the end. You say, what happened? Trump. Right? Yeah. Man, I mean, we are trying to kill the patient. Well, it was a wicked country from the start. It was not. You know what the greatest St. Patrick Henry ever said was? No. No, the greatest St. Patrick Henry ever said was not, give me liberty or give me death. That was the second greatest thing he ever said. The greatest thing Patrick Henry ever said was, it cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was not founded by Christians, but not founded by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. So if you get a King James Bible thumping imbecile that thinks that hating America is a Bible doctrine, could you explain to me why every song about this country has a verse that mentions God? From America the Beautiful to our anthem. Every one of them. You look at every one of them, there's a verse in there about God. You say, why? Because this country was founded on that book and founded on that God. And so this is my theater. I go out of the country. I really do. Evangelists, you know, they think like traveling international is a big deal. And I never have. I go out of the country if I'm asked to go out of the country, usually by people in the country. But honest guys, honest, you know, I know guys that go, well, you want to go to this country and you got to go to that country and you got to go. I don't have to go anyplace. I love this one. And God called me. When God called me to be evangelist, I told him this. I said, Lord, I will spend like money. I will spend my life on the lower 48. I don't have to go to Alaska. I don't have to go to Hawaii. I'll just drive around the lower 48. Now, I've been to all 50 of them, preached in all 50 of them. And I preached in, I don't know how many countries, maybe 20. And I go because they asked me to go. But you know what I tell God when I'm in another country? I get on my knees and I say, God, every day here is a day out of my field. I want to help this country while I'm here so that my time away from my country is not wasted. But I love this country. So guys, this is your community. You know what your, do you know where your, what your theater of operation is? I got two more and I'll be done. Let me ask you this. If you're one of the Lord's soldiers, what does your service cost you? You know what Baptists, I think, have come up with? We've come up with painless sacrifice. I don't know how that works, but we found some way to give without hurting. I shoot Bryce, take his money and give it to the church. And he's got a lot of it. No, really, that's how we do it. How can you have painless sacrifice? But that's what we want. We want to sacrifice. I don't know how they plan on doing it. Guys, do you understand that every soldier sacrifices something? And I know what some of you say, oh, you know, if a man's in reserves or the guard and they take him overseas, when he comes back, he's got to get his, they got to give him his job back. That all sounds good. That doesn't, isn't how it works. And I don't know if you know this, but if a guy is any kind of IT, if he's any kind of internet tech or computers, if he's out for a year, he is almost out for good. It is hard to get back up to speed. But that doesn't even matter. You say, well, what if he's not? Well, you know what? Some guys come back. I had a young man. I was there when he was born. He was in my church. And he grew up and he joined the army. And he was in Iraq. And his best friend was shot, died in his arms. And then he took an RPG round about 3 feet away from him. Can't hear anymore. I don't even know if he's, is he 30, Kathy? 30 what? Okay, so older than 30. Can't hear. Got shrapnel in him. You understand, some guys come back, less one arm, less one leg. There's a book out there if you want to read it. It's called Tough As They Come. It's about one of only five quad amputees. Guy stepped on a mine, a sergeant in the army, both legs, both arms, and drives a car. You think he hasn't paid? And you know what? Some of them guys came back from that war. They don't even know they're back. And a wife looks at a man that she was in love with, and he don't even know who she is. I'm telling you, everybody that ever got into God's army, it cost them something. They had to walk away from something. They had to leave something, something they wanted to do, something that they loved. I get so sick of hearing these 20-year-olds say, yeah, I'm going to do this and this and this. And then when I retire, I'm going to serve God. And I say, yeah, I think that's what you should do. When your back is its straightest, and when your vision is clearest, and your mind is its sharpest, and when you're in your best health, use it for yourself. Then when you hit about 65 or 70 and you beat yourself to death on the ski slopes or whatever you did, and give what's left over to God and then tell him to pay you for it. I want to paint shop. I love cars. All I ever wanted was a paint shop. I want a body shop, but I want to get into custom paints. And I got saved and went down to Bible college, working at a body shop, came back up my first summer, worked at my body shop. And when I say my body shop, it was the owner and me. We was a two-man shop. And the end of my first summer, I'm going to go back to my second year of Bible college. And his name was Rodney. And I said, well, Rod, I said, going back down to my second year of school, but I said, I'll come up next summer and work for you again. He said, no, you won't. I said, why not? He said, I'm selling the whole place, moving to Texas. I said, really? Now, the whole place was a three-bedroom house. The shop, a piece of land, about $15,000 worth of mechanics and body shop tools, specialty tools, and the name. He's even going to leave the name. And I said, really? I said, who are you selling it to? He said, I'm selling it to you for $7,000. You say, man, that was a steal. No, you don't understand. Yeah, it was a steal, but you know what it was? It was my dream. It was all I ever wanted. And it took about 5 seconds. And I said, nah, not me, Rod. Call to preach. Somebody asked me last week, they said, you ever still have your tools? No, sold them. Man, hardest thing I did 30-some years ago is sell my compressors and torches and paint guns and stuff like that. Man, I love it. I love it. But I wouldn't trade it for what I get to do now. I wouldn't trade it. And so, what's it cost you? It's got to cost you something. My last one. I told you I've not been in the military, but there's one thing that I do understand about the military, and this is there's no shame to either side of this, okay? There's two kinds of guys that serve in the military. There's a guy that joins, serves how it is 4, 5, 6 years, whatever, and gets out. Do you understand that some guys, they were drafted for 2 years, and in that 2 years, won the Congressional Medal of Honor? So you got this guy that comes in and he enlists and he serves his enlistment and he gets out. And then there's a guy that gets in. And like, why would you want out of here? They call them lifers. I got a daily prayer list, several things that I pray for, but I've got several. Probably about 15 to 20. Active duty military guys. My posters, those posters. That guy was an 82nd Airborne that did those. He's with the Lord now. He had two sons. One of them was in Special Forces. The other one was in Special Forces. The youngest one that was in Special Forces was in, and he is now out. The other one in Special Forces is now in Special Ops and has been for, oh, well over 20 years. I probably prayed every day for him for 20 years. Easy. He is probably over 40 years old. And he's some kind of a sergeant. You know, I mean, he's got 3 up and 1,000 of them down. You know, he's all the way down his wrist. And man, you know, I was talking to a guy one time, and he said he was in, I don't know if it was Ranger school. And, you know, you remember when you were 18, you thought people 20 were old? Really, is that not true? Like 20 years old is, whoa. 25 is, how do they get past that? Don't they die at 25? And so you got these guys in there, they're about 20 years old, and they are just primed, and they're pumping iron, and they're ready to go. And they got a sergeant that's over 40. And they're joking about him. You know, Grandpa. He probably was. And he said, we used to laugh. He said, he was in good shape, but he said, we used to laugh at how old he was. And he said, one day he came, and he said, now, get your packs on, ladies. And they put all their full packs, and it's like 100-some degrees. And he said, now, we're going to go on a 15-mile hike. And he said, he ran the entire hike, counting cadence as he ran backwards. He is in front of us going, hip, hip, and he, the whole thing, full pack. And he said, guys were just falling out all over the place. Oh, the lady couldn't make it. You say, what is that? Lifer. That's a lifer. Ministry is ministry. But I can't, you know, I get people, I'm 70. And I get people saying, when you retire? I got students of mine that have retired. And I'm not saying I'm never going to. And I know it could be over next week, but I can't think that. I am a lifer. So here's what I'm asking you. If you're in the Lord's service, a soldier, are you still in? Are you still active? You need to re-up, or are you AWOL? Are you still in? Man, I got in, and I just have been in. I love being in. I wouldn't want to be anything else. I love being a preacher. I told you, people say, I'm glad you fly. Man, we love driving. I love preaching. I love teaching. I love anything associated with that book. I love being around God's people and doing something. You know, when somebody comes up and says, you preached this and it helped me, man, that's a blessing. I got a text from a guy, and he said, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I heard you preach. We ought to read 10 pages a day. So I just want to write, let you know, finish my 84th time through the Bible. Man, that's all right. I like that. That's better than painting a car. That's better than painting a car and everybody looking at it saying you did a great job. Still in? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand and tell me if you're the Lord's soldier. But the next time somebody asks you to raise your hand on that, you think, you better answer these questions, okay? Let me tell you about a guy I knew when I was a kid. He was my age. He was 18. Except when I was 18, I was not big. And this guy, his name was Bobby. And Bobby was about 6'2" when he was 18 years old. He was about 225. And he was a scrapper. He was a fighter. I mean, Bobby would, man, he hammered guys. There were two brothers from another town that terrorized everybody. Bobby whipped them both at the same time. And he was bad news. And if you remember, in 1968, that was the height of the Vietnam War. And there was a song that was going all across the country called The Ballad of the Green Berets. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. Now, I'm gonna date myself when I say this, but he didn't go to Kmart because there wasn't one. He didn't go to Walmart. He went to Woolworths. And for $1.50, he wasn't even out of high school. But for $1.50, he bought a Green Beret. And I want you to know something. He put that beret on. He looked good. He really looked good. Now, I'm from Maslin, home of professional football, back when they stood for the anthem. And my hometown of 33,000 people, we like football. Our high school stadium seats 24,000 people. It is not chain link fence and some bleachers. It is. You ever hear Paul Brown, who started the Cleveland Browns and Cincinnati Bengals? Well, the name of our stadium is the Paul Brown Tiger Stadium because he was our high school coach. And it was during halftime of a football game. And there was about half a dozen of us, you know. And we went to the bleachers, you know, to go get some food. And Bobby's this big barrel-chested guy like this. Red hair. And he had that Green Beret on. And Bobby just kind of sauntering through the crowd like this. And people just kind of got out of his way. And Bobby didn't see this guy, but I did. We're walking through this crowd, and over there at a hot dog stand is a black guy, not quite as big as Bobby. I'd say maybe 6', 10, 20 pounds less. This guy's just, his food's just come. He's just paying for it. Happens to look over his shoulder, he sees Bobby. He left his food, he left his money, and he started coming through the crowd. Bobby didn't see him coming. He came through the crowd like this. And he is putting people out. And here's Bobby just walking like this. And this guy stepped right in front of Bobby like that and cut him off. And Bobby stopped like this. And he had these two things on the end of his arms that when he closed them up like this, it looked like he was holding two hams. And when this guy cut him off, this black guy, I saw Bobby's hands go like this. And I saw the red come up in his face like his hair. And I thought, oh, pal, you're going to wish you never stepped in front of Bobby today. And that black guy said this. You earned that. And And I saw that color drain back out of Bobby's face. And I saw those hands go limp, and he went, no. Take it off. I earned mine. Never saw that Green Beret again. He went to Vietnam, 82nd Airborne. He did his part. You know what they have today? They have what they call stolen valor. Some guy goes out and buys a surplus Army uniform, stands on a corner and says he was in a military uniform, military outfit. Will you help me? Man, I have found so many 25-year-old Vietnam vets, I'm just astounded. But do you understand why that guy who went through all of that didn't like somebody pretending? That's how I feel when God's people say, I'm a soldier, and you can't answer the questions that I asked you tonight. I'd like you to stand. Your head's bowed and your eyes closed. Don't raise your hand. Are you a soldier? Can you remember when you joined? I'm telling you, man, that day I joined, I wanted to be in so bad I was crying. I just wanted to be in the Lord's service. Do you know who your enemy is? Who are you trying to hurt? Another Christian? Who are you supporting? What's your military objective? What's your theater of operation? What does this cost you? You still in? Maybe some of you young guys need to decide you don't want to be an IT man for God. He doesn't need any more IT men. He needs somebody to get out there with the mud and the blood. You know what's wrong? We got a whole generation of young men who are afraid somebody will hate them. It's okay if you're hated by the right people. Maybe somebody needs to join tonight. Maybe somebody needs to re-enlist tonight. Maybe somebody needs to decide, I just can't get into that combat. Then support somebody that is. But the next time somebody says, are you a soldier for Christ? Between what you heard tonight, the questions you've been asked, you better have an answer. You better not put your hand up, because some of us earned ours. Father, I do count this pastor as my friend. I count this church as my friend. I count these people as my friend. My friends, I've known them for years. But being friends doesn't mean they're soldiers for you. God, I've seen some preachers pay. They've paid it with their marriages. They've paid it with their health. They've paid it with their kids. They've been just blasted, mostly by their own people. It's not even the devil's crowd. But they get back up and they go back to war for you. And Lord God, I don't think you need another marketeer, merchandiser, entrepreneur. I don't think you need another IT man. I don't think you need another negotiator. I think you need soldiers today as bad as you did 40, 50 years ago. I hope some of these young men will fall out of love with themselves and fall in love with you, so in love that they would take what they love so much and throw it on the altar and say, just make me a soldier for you. I hope somebody here, God, they remember when they got in, but it's been a while, Father, since they've been in battle. Maybe they need to re-enlist. Maybe they just need to climb back over the fence and get inside again. I know this, God. We'd all be better if you had more soldiers. So I pray, Father, that these people will settle some issues with you tonight. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed,